Osho, Vigyan Bhairav Tantra, Volume 1, The Book of the Secrets, a New Commentary, Discourse Number 2, given in Bombay, India.
Many questions are there. The first: what is the difference between traditional yoga and tantra? Are they the same? Tantra and yoga are basically different. They reach to the same goal, but the paths are not only different but contrary also. So this has to be understood very clearly. The yoga process is also methodology. Yoga is also technique. Yoga is not philosophy, just like tantra. Yoga also depends on action, method, technique. Doing leads to being in yoga also, but the process is different. In yoga, one has to fight. That is the path of the warrior. On the path of tantra, one has not to fight at all. Rather, on the contrary, one has to indulge, but with awareness. Yoga is suppression. With awareness. Tantra is indulgence with awareness. Tantra says that whatsoever you are, the ultimate is not opposite to it. It is a growth. You can grow to be the ultimate. There is no opposition between you and the reality. You are part of it. So no struggle, no conflict, no opposition to nature is needed. You have to use nature. You have to use whatsoever you are to go beyond. In yoga, you have to fight with yourself to go beyond. In yoga, the world and the moksha, you as you are and you as you can be, are two opposite things. Suppress, fight, dissolve that which you are so that you can attain that which you can be. Going beyond in yoga is a death. You must die for your real being to be born. In the eyes of tantra, yoga is a deep suicide. You must kill your natural self, your body, your instincts, your desires, everything. Tantra says, accept yourself as you are. It is a deep acceptability. Don't create a gap between you and the real, between the world and the Nirvana. Don't create any gap. There is no gap for Tantra. No death is needed. For your rebirth, no death is needed. Rather, a transcendence. For this transcendence, use yourself. For example, sex is there, the basic energy. The basic energy you are born through, born with. The basic cells of your being, of your body, are sexual. So the human mind revolves around sex. For yoga, fight with this energy. Through fight, you create a different center in yourself. The more you fight, the more you become integrated on a different center. Then sex is not your center. Fighting with sex, of course, consciously, will create a new center in you of being, a new emphasis, a new crystallization. Then sex will not be your energy. You will create your energy fighting with sex. A different energy will come into being. And a different center of existence. For Tantra, use the energy of sex, don't fight with it. Transform it. Don't think in terms of enmity, be friendly to it. It is your energy. It is not evil, it is not bad. Every energy is just neutral. It can be used against you, it can be used for you. You can make a block of it, a barrier. You can make a step. It can be used. Rightly used, it becomes friendly. Wrongly used, it becomes your enemy. It is none. Energy is neutral. As ordinary man is using sex, it becomes your enemy. It destroys you. You simply dissipate in it. Yoga takes the opposite view, opposite to the ordinary mind. Ordinary mind is being destroyed by his own desires. So yoga says, stop desiring, be desireless, fight desire, and create an integration in you which is desireless. Tantra says, be aware of the desire. Don't create any fight. Move in desire with full consciousness. And when you move in desire with full consciousness, you transcend it. You are in it and still you are not in it. You pass through it, but you remain an outsider. Yoga appealed much. because the yoga is just opposite the ordinary mind. So the ordinary mind can understand the language of yoga. You know how sex is destroying you, how it has destroyed you, how you go on revolving around it like a slave, like a puppet. You know this by our experience. So when yoga says fight it, you immediately understand the language. That is the appeal, is the appeal of yoga. Tantra could not be so easily appealing. It seems difficult how to move in desire without being overwhelmed by it. How to be in the sex act consciously with full awareness. The ordinary mind becomes afraid. It seems dangerous. Not that it is dangerous, because whatsoever you know about sex creates this danger for you. You know yourself. You know how you can deceive yourself. You know very well that your mind is cunning. You can move in desire, in sex, in everything. And you can deceive yourself that you are moving with full awareness. That's why you feel the danger. The danger is not in Tantra. It is in you. And the appeal of yoga is because of you, your ordinary mind. Your sex suppressed, sex-starved, sex-indulging mind. Because ordinary mind is not healthy about sex, yoga has appeal. A better humanity with a healthy sex, natural, normal. We are not normal and natural. We are absolutely abnormal. Unhealthy, really insane. But because everyone is like us, we never feel it. Madness is so normal that not to be mad may look abnormal. A Buddha is abnormal, a Jesus is abnormal. Amidst us, they don't belong to us. This normalcy is a disease. This normal mind has created the appeal of yoga. If you take sex naturally, with no philosophy around it, with no philosophy for or against, if you take sex as you take your hands, your eyes, if it is totally accepted as a natural thing, then Tantra will have appeal. And then only Tantra can be useful for many. But the days of Tantra are coming. Sooner or later, Tantra is to explode for the first time on the masses. Because for the first time, the time is ripe. Right to take sex naturally. It is possible that explosion may come from the west. Because Freud, Jung, Rick, they have prepared the background. They don't know anything about Tantra, but they have made the basic ground for Tantra to evolve. Western psychology has come to a conclusion that the basic human disease is somewhere around sex. The basic insanity of man is sex-oriented. So unless this sex orientation is dissolved, man cannot be natural, normal. Man has gone wrong only because of attitudes about sex. No attitude is needed, only then you are natural. What attitude have you about your eyes? Are they evil? Or are they divine? Are you for your eyes or against them? No attitude. That's why your eyes are normal. Take some attitude. Think that eyes are evil. Then seeing will become difficult. Then seeing will take the same problematic take as sex has taken. Then you would like to see, you will desire and you will hanker to see, but when you see, you will feel guilty. Whenever you will see, you will feel guilty. You have done something wrong. You have sinned. You would like to kill the very instrument of seeing, you will like to destroy your eyes. And the more you want to destroy them, the more you will become eye-centered. Then you will start a very absurd activity. You would like more and more to see, and simultaneously you will feel more and more guilty. This same has happened with sex centers. Tantra says accept whatsoever you are. Now, this is the basic note. Total acceptability. And only through total acceptability you can grow. Then use every energy you have. How can you use? Accept, then find out what are these energies, what is sex, what is this phenomena. We are not acquainted with it. We know many things about sex taught by others. We may have passed through sex act, but with a guilty mind, with a suppressive attitude, in haste, in hurry. Something has to be done and unburdened. Sex act is not a loving act. You are not happy in it. You cannot leave it. The more you try to leave it, the more attractive it becomes. The more you want to negate it, the more you feel invited. You cannot negate it. But this attitude to negate, to destroy, destroys the very mind, the very awareness, the very sensibility which can understand it. So sex goes on with no sensitivity in it. Then you cannot understand. Only deep sensitivity can understand anything. A deep feeling, a deep moving in it, can understand anything. You can understand sex only if you move in it, as a poet moves amidst flowers. Only then. If you feel guilty about flowers, you may pass through the garden, but you will pass with closed eyes. And you will be in a hurry, in a deep, mad haste. Somehow you have to go out of the garden. Then how you can be aware? So Tantra says, accept whatsoever you are. A great mystery. Accept it. And move with every energy, with deep sensitivity, with awareness, with love, with understanding. Move with it. Then every desire becomes a vehicle to go beyond it. Then every energy becomes a help. And then this very world is nirvana. And then this very body is temple, is a holy temple, a holy place. Yoga is negation. Tantra is affirmation. Yoga thinks in terms of duality. That's why the word yoga, it means to put two things together, to yoke two things together. But two things are there. The duality is there. Tantra says there is no duality. If there is duality, then you cannot put them together. And howsoever you try, they will remain two. Howsoever put together, they will remain two. And the fight will continue. And the dualism will remain. If the world and the divine are two, then they cannot be put together. If really they are not two, they are only appearing as two, only then they can be one. If your body and your soul are two, then they cannot be put together. If you and the God are two, then there is no possibility of putting them together. They will remain two. Tantra says there is no duality. It is only an appearance. So why have appearance to grow more? Tantra says, why helped this appearance of duality to grow more? Dissolve it this very moment. Be one. Through acceptability, you become one, not through fight. Accept the world, accept the body, accept everything that is inherent in it. Don't create a different center in you. Because for Tantra, that different center is nothing but the ego. Svartantra, remember, that is nothing but the ego. Don't create an ego. Just be aware what you are. If you fight, then the ego will be there. So it is difficult to find a yogi who is not an egoist. It is difficult. And yogis may go on talking about egolessness, but they cannot be egoless. Their very process creates the ego. The fight is the process. If you fight, you are bound to create an ego. And the more you fight, the more strengthened the ego will be. And if you win in your fight, then you will achieve the supreme ego. Tantra says, no fight. Then there is no possibility of the ego. If we understand Tantra, then there will be many problems. Because for us, if there is no fight, there is only indulgence. No fight means indulgence for us. And then we become afraid. We have indulged for lives together, and we have reached nowhere. But for Tantra, indulgence is not our indulgence. Tantra says, indulge, but be aware. You are angry. Tantra will not say, don't be angry. Tantra says, be angry, wholeheartedly, but be aware. Tantra is not against anger. Tantra is only against spiritual sleepiness, spiritual unconsciousness. Be aware and be angry. And this is the secret of the matter, that if you are aware, anger is transformed. It becomes compassion. So Tantra says, don't say anger is your enemy. It is compassion in seed. The same anger, the same energy will become compassion. If you fight with it, then there will be no possibility for compassion. So if you succeed in fighting, in suppressing, you will be a dead man. There will be no anger because you have suppressed it. There will be no compassion also, because only anger can be transformed into compassion. If you succeed in your suppression, which is impossible, then there will be no sex, but no love also. Because with the sex dead, there is no energy to grow into love. So you will be without sex, but you will be also without love. And then the whole point is missed, because without love there is no divineness, and without love there is no liberation. And without love, there is no freedom. Tantra says, these same energies are to be transformed. It can be said in this way, if you are against the world, then there is no nirvana. Because this world itself is to be transformed into nirvana. then you are against the basic energies, which are the source. So Tantra Alchemy says, don't fight, be friendly. With all the energy that are given to you, welcome them. Feel grateful that you have anger, that you have sex, that you have greed. Feel grateful because these are the hidden sources and they can be transformed and they can be opened. And when sex is transformed, it becomes love. The poison is last. The ugliness is last. The seed is ugly, but when it becomes alive, it sprouts and flowers. Then there is beauty. Don't throw the seed, because you are also throwing the flowers in it. They are not there yet, so manifest that you can see them. They are unmanifest, but they are there. Use this seed so that you can attain to flowers. Acceptability, a sensitive understanding and awareness. Then indulgence is allowed. One thing more, which is really very strange, but one of the deepest discoveries of Tantra, and that is, whatsoever you take as your enemies, greed, anger, hate, sex, whatsoever, your attitude that they are enemies makes them your enemies. Take them as divine gifts and approach them with a very grateful heart. For example, Tantra has developed many techniques for the transformation of sex energy. Approach sexual act as if you are approaching the temple of the divine. Approach sexual act as if it is prayer, as if it is meditation. Feel the holiness of it. That's why in Khajuraho, in Puri, in Konark, every temple is with Maithun sculpture. Sex act on the walls of temples seems illogical, particularly for Christianity, for Islam, for Jainism. It seems inconceivable, contradictory. How the temple is joined with Maithun pictures. On the outer wall of Khajuraho temples, every type of conceivable sexual act is pictured in a stone. Why? In the temple, it doesn't look It doesn't have any place in our minds, at least. Christianity cannot conceive a church wall with Khajuraho pictures. Impossible. Modern Hindus also feel guilty because modern Hindus' minds are created by Christianity. They are Hindu Christians and they are worse, because to be a Christian is good, but to be a Hindu Christian is just weird. They feel guilty. One Hindu leader, Purushottam Das Tandon, even proposed that these temples should be destroyed. They don't belong to us. Really, it looks they don't belong to us, because Tantra has not been in our hearts for a long time, for centuries. It has not been the main current. Yoga has been the main current, and for yoga, Khajuraho is inconceivable. It must be destroyed. Tantra says, approach sex act as if you are entering a holy temple. That's why they pictured sex act on their holy temples. They said, approach sex as you are entering a holy temple. So when you enter a holy temple, sex must be there. So they become conjoined in your mind, associated, so that you can feel the world and the divine are not two fighting elements, but one. They are not contradictory, but polar opposites helping each other. And they can exist only because of this polarity. If this polarity is the last, the whole world is lost. So see the deep running oneness. Don't see the polar points only. See the inner running current which makes them one. For Tantra, everything is holy. Remember this. For Tantra, everything is holy. Nothing is unholy. Look it in this way. For an irreligious person, everything is unholy. For so-called religious persons, something is holy, something unholy. For Tantra, everything is holy. One Christian missionary was with me some days before, and he said, God created the world. So I asked him, who created the sin? He said, devil. Then I asked him, who created the devil? Then he was at a loss. He said, of course, God created the devil. Devil creates the sin and God creates the devil. Then who is the real sinner? Devil or God? But a dualist conception always leads to such absurdities. For Tantra, God and devil are not two. Really, for Tantra, there is nothing which can be called devil. Everything is divine. Everything is holy. And this seems at the right standpoint, the deepest. If anything is unholy in this world, from where it comes? And how it can be? So only two alternatives are there. The alternative first of the atheist, who says everything is unholy, then it is okay. He is also a non-dualist. He sees no holiness in the world. Or the Tantra alternative, everything is holy. He is again a non-dualist. But between these two, the so-called religious persons are not really religious, neither religious nor irreligious. Because then they are always in a conflict, and their whole theology is just making ends to meet, trying ends to meet, and those ends cannot meet. If a single cell, a single atom in this world is unholy, then the whole world becomes unholy. Because how that single atom can exist in a holy world? How it can be? It is supported by everything. To be, it has to be supported by everything. And if the unholy element is supported by all the holy elements, then what is the difference? So either the world is a holy, total, unconditional, or it is unholy. There is no middle path. Tantra says everything is holy. That's why we cannot understand it. It is the deepest non-dual standpoint. If we can call it a standpoint, it is not. Because any standpoint is bound to be dual. It is not against anything, so it is not any standpoint. It is a felt unity, a lived unity. These are two paths, yoga and tantra. Tantra could not be so appealing because of our crippled minds. But whenever there is someone who is healthy inside, not a chaos, Tantra has a beauty. Then only he can understand what Tantra is. Yoga has appeal. Easy appeal, because of our disturbed minds. Remember, it is ultimately your mind which makes anything attractive or not attractive. It is you who are the deciding factor. These approaches are different. I am not saying that one cannot reach through yoga. One can reach through yoga also, but not through the yoga which is prevalent. The yoga which is prevalent is really not yoga, but your interpretation of the diseased mind. Yoga can be authentically an approach towards the ultimate, But that too is only possible when your mind is healthy, your mind is not diseased and ill. Then yoga takes a different shape. For example, Mahavir is on the path of yoga. But he is not really suppressing sex, because he has known, he has lived, he is deeply acquainted with it, and it has become useless. So it drops. Buddha is on the path of yoga, but he has lived through the world. He is deeply acquainted. He is not fighting. Once you know something, you become free of it. It simply drops like dead leaves dropping from a tree. It is not renunciation. There is no fight involved at all. Look at Buddha's face. It doesn't look the face of a fighter. He has not been fighting. He is so relaxed. His face is the very symbol of relaxation. No fight. Look at your yogis. The fight is apparent on their face. Deep down, much turmoil is there. Just now they are sitting on volcanoes. You can look in their eyes, in their face, and you will feel it. Deep somewhere, they have suppressed all their diseases, but they have not gone beyond. In a healthy world, where everyone is living his life authentically, individually, not imitating others, living his own life in his own way, both are possible. He may learn the deep sensitivity which transcends. He may come to a point where all desires become futile and drop. Yoga can also lead. But to me, yoga will lead also in the same world in which Tantra can lead. Remember this. We need a healthy mind, a natural man. In that world where natural man is, Tantra will also lead and yoga will also lead. In our so-called ill society, neither yoga can lead nor Tantra. Because if we choose yoga, we don't choose it because desires have become useless. No, they are still meaningful. They are not dropping by themselves. We have to force them. If we choose yoga, we choose as a technique of suppression. If we choose Tantra, we choose Tantra as a cunningness, as a deep deception to indulge. So with an unhealthy mind, neither yoga nor Tantra, they both will lead to deceptions. A healthy, particularly sexually healthy mind is needed to start with. Then it is not very difficult to choose your path. You can choose yoga, you can choose Tantra. There are two types of persons. Basically, male and female. Not biologically, psychologically. Those who are basically psychologically males, aggressive, violent, extrovert, yoga is their path. Those who are basically feminine, receptive, passive, non-violent, tantra is their path. So you may notice, for Tantra, Mother, Kali, Tara, and so many, Devi, Bhairavi, they are very significant. In yoga, you will never hear any name mentioned of a feminine deity. Tantra has feminine deities. Yoga, male gods. Yoga is energy outgoing. Tantra is energy moving inwards. So you can say, in modern psychological terms, yoga is extrovert and tantra is introvert. So it depends on the personality. If you have an introvert personality, then fight is not for you. If you have an extrovert personality, then fight is for you. But we are confused, just confused. We are just a mess. That's why nothing helps. On the contrary, everything disturbs. Yoga will disturb you, Tantra will disturb you. Every medicine is going to create a new illness for you. Because the chooser is ill, deceased. His choice is ill, deceased. So I don't mean that through yoga you cannot reach. I emphasize Tantra only because we are going to understand what Tantra is. Another question. On the path of surrender, how does a seeker come to the right technique out of 112 methods? On the path of will, there are methods. These 112 methods. On the path of surrender, surrender itself is the method. There are no other methods. Remember this. All methods are non-surrendering. Because the method means depending on yourself. You can do something, the technique is there, so do it. On the path of surrender, you are no more. You cannot do anything. You have done the ultimate, the last. You have surrendered. On the path of surrender, surrender is the only method. All these 112 methods, they require a certain will. They require something to be done by you. You manipulate your energies, you balance your energies, you create a center in your chaos, you do something. Your effort is significant, basic, quiet. On the path of surrender, only one thing is required, you surrender. So we will go deep in 112 methods. So it is good to talk something about surrender, because there will be no methods. In these 112 methods, there will be nothing for surrender. Why? Shiva has not said anything about surrender, because nothing can be said. Bhairavi herself, Devi herself, has reached Shiva not through any method. She has simply surrendered. So this must be noted. She is asking these questions not for herself. These questions are asked for the whole humanity. She has attained Shiva. She is already in his lap. She is already embraced by him. She has become one with him. But still she is asking two things. One, she is not asking for herself. There is no need. She is asking for whole humanity. But if she has attained, why she is asking Shiva? She herself can say to the humanity. She has come through the path of surrender, so she doesn't know anything about methods. She herself has come through love. Love is enough unto itself. Love doesn't need anything more. She has come through love. So she doesn't know anything about any methods, techniques. That's why she is asking. So Shiva relates 112 methods. He also will not talk about surrender, because surrender is not a method really. You surrender only when every method has become futile. When you cannot reach from any method, you have tried your best, you have knocked every door and no door opens, and you have passed through all the routes and no route leads. You have done whatsoever you can do, and now you feel helpless. In that total helplessness, surrender happens. So on the path of surrender, no methods. But what is surrender? And how it works? And if surrender works, then what is the need of 112 methods? Then why go in them unnecessarily? The mind will say, then okay, if surrender works, then it is better to surrender. Why go hankering after methods? And who knows whether this method will suit you or not? And it may take lives to find out. So it is good to surrender, but it is difficult. It is good. It is difficult. It is the most difficult thing in the world. Methods are not difficult. They are easy. You can train yourself. But for surrender, you cannot train yourself. No training. You cannot ask how to surrender. The very question is absurd. Can you ask how to surrender? Can you ask how to love? Either there is love or there is not. But you cannot ask how to love. And if someone tells you and teaches you how to love, remember, then you will never be capable of love. Once a technique is given to you for love, you will cling to the technique. That's why actors cannot love. They know so many techniques, so many methods. And we are all actors. Once you know the trick how to love, then love will not flower. Because you can create a facet, a deception. And with the deception, you are out of it, not involved. You are secured. Love is going totally open, vulnerable. It is dangerous. You become insecure. We cannot ask how to love. We cannot ask how to surrender. It happens. Love happens, surrender happens. Love and surrender are deeply one. But what it is? And if we cannot know how to surrender, at least we can know how we are maintaining ourselves from surrendering. How we are resisting ourselves from surrendering. That can be known, and that is helpful. How you have not surrendered yet? What is your technique of non-surrendering? If you have not fallen in love yet, then the real problem is not how to love. The real problem is to dig deep. How you have lived without love? What is your trick? What's your technique? What's your structure, defense structure? How you have lived without love? That can be understood, and that should be understood. So first thing, we live with the ego, in the ego, centered in the ego. I am. Without knowing who I am, I go on announcing I am. This I amness is false because I don't know who I am. And unless I know who I am, how I can say I? This I is a false I. This false I is the ego. This is the defense. This protects you from surrendering. You cannot surrender, but you can become aware of this defense measure. If you become aware of it, it dissolves. By and by, you are not strengthening it. And one day you come to feel I am not. The moment you come to feel I am not, surrender happens. So try to find out whether you are. Really, is there any center in you you can call my, I? So go deep down in yourself. Go on finding, trying. Where is this I? Where is the abode of this ego? Rinpoche went to his teacher, his guru, and he said, give me freedom. So the teacher said, bring yourself. If you are, I will make you free. But if you are not, then how I can make you free? You are already free. And freedom, his guru said, is not your freedom. Really, freedom is freedom from you. So go and find out where this I, where you are, and come to me. This is the meditation. Go and meditate. So the disciple Rinjaya goes, meditates weeks, months, and then he comes, and then he says, I am not the body, only this much I have found. So the guru said, this much you have become free. Go again. Try to find out. Then he tries, meditates. Then he finds that I am not my mind, because I can observe my thoughts. So the observer is different from the observed. So I am not my mind. So he comes and he says, I am not mine. So his guru says, now you are 3/4 liberated. Now go again and find out then who you are. So he was thinking that I am not my body, I am not my mind. He has read, studied, he was well informed. So he was thinking, I am not my body, not my mind, so I must be my soul, my Atma. Because this Atma, this soul, is nothing but your mental information. Just doctrines, words, philosophies. So he came running one day and he said, now I am no more. So his guru said, am I now to teach you the methods for freedom? The Rinzai said, I am free because I am no more. There is no one to be in bondage. I am just a void, emptiness, nothingness. Only nothingness can be free. If you are something, you will be in bondage. If you are, you will be in bondage. Only a void, vacant space can be free. Then you cannot bind it. Rinzai came running and said, I am no more. Nowhere I am to be found. This is freedom. And for the first time, he touched his guru's feet. For the first time, not actually, because he had touched many times before also. But the guru said, for the first time, you have touched my feet. Rinzai asked, why you say for the first time? I have touched your feet many times. But the guru said, but you were there. So how? You can touch my feet while you are already there? While you are there, how can you touch my feet? The eye can never touch anybody's feet. Even apparently it looks, it touches somebody's feet, it is touching its own feet, just in a roundabout way. You have touched my feet for the first time, the teacher said, because now you are no more. And this is also the last time, the teacher said. The first and the last. Surrender happens when you are not. So you cannot surrender. That's why surrender cannot be a technique. You cannot surrender. You are the hindrance. When you are not, surrender is there. So you and surrender cannot cohabit. There is no coexistence between you and surrender. Either you are or surrender is. So find out where you are, who you are, This inquiry creates many, many surprising interpretations. Ramana Maharishi used to say, "Inquire, who am I?" It was misunderstood. Even his nearmost disciples have not understood the meaning of it. They think that this is an inquiry to find out really who I am. This is not. If you go on inquiring who I am, you are bound to come to the conclusion you are not. This is not an inquiry to find out who I am. Really, this is an inquiry to dissolve. I have given to many this technique, to inquire within who am I. Then a month or 2 months later, they will come to me and they will say, "I have still not found. Who am I? Who am I? The question is still the question. There is no answer." So I tell them, continue. Someday the answer will come, and they hope that the answer will come. There is going to be no answer. Only the question will dissolve. There is not going to be an answer that you are this. Only the question will dissolve. There will be no one to ask even, "Who am I?" And then you know. When the I is not, the real I opens. When the ego is not, you are for the first time encountering your being. That being is wide. You can surrender. You have surrendered. You are surrender now. So there can be no techniques, are only negative techniques. This inquiry, "Who am I?" How surrender works? If you surrender, what happens? How it works? Because we will come to understand how methods work. We will go deep into methods and we will come to know how they work. They have a scientific basis of work. How surrender works? When you surrender, you become a valley. When you are an ego, you are like a peak. Ego means you are above everyone else. You are somebody. The others may recognize you, may not recognize you. That's another thing. You recognize that you are above everyone. You are like a peak. Nothing can enter you. When one surrenders, one becomes like a valley. One becomes depth, not height. Then the whole existence begins to pour into him from everywhere. The whole existence begins to pour. He is just a vacuum, just a depth, abyss, bottomless. The whole existence begins to pour from everywhere. You can call God runs from everywhere towards him, enters him from every pore, fills him totally. this surrender, this becoming a valley, an abyss, this surrendering can be felt in many ways. There are minor surrenders, there are major surrenders. Even in minor surrenders, you feel it. Surrendering to a guru is a minor surrender. But you begin to feel it, because the guru begins to flow into you immediately. If you surrender to a teacher, suddenly you feel his energy flowing into you. If you cannot feel energy flowing into you, then know well, you have not surrendered. Even in a minor way, you have not surrendered. There are so many stories which have become meaningless for us, because we don't know how they happened. Mahakashyap came to Buddha. And Buddha just touched his head with his hand. And the thing happened. And Mahakashyap began to dance. So Ananda asked Buddha, what has happened to him? And I have been for 40 years with you. Is he mad? Or is he just befooling others? What has happened to him? And I have touched your feet thousands and thousand times. Of course, to Anand, this Mahakashyap will look either he is mad or he is just deceiving. He was with Buddha for 40 years, but there was a problem. He was his elder brother, Buddha's elder brother. That was the problem. When Ananda came to Buddha 40 years before, the first thing he said to Buddha was this: I am your elder brother. And when you will initiate me, I will become your disciple. So give me three things before I become your disciple, because then I cannot demand. One, I will be always with you. Give me the promise. You cannot say, go somewhere else. I will follow you. Second, I will sleep in the same room where you sleep. You cannot say me, go out. I will be with you like your shadow. And thirdly, if I bring anyone in any time, even in midnight, you will have to answer him. You cannot say, this is not the time. And give me these three promises while I am still your elder brother. Because once I become your disciple, then I will have to follow you. You are still younger to me. Give these promises. So Buddha promised him, and this became the problem. This became the problem for 40 years. Ananda was with Buddha, but he could never surrender, because this is not the spirit of surrender. Ananda asks many, many times, when I am going to attain, Buddha says, unless I die, you will not attain. And Ananda could attain only when Buddha died. What happened to this Mahakashyap suddenly? Is Buddha partial? Partial to Mahakashyap? He is not. He is flowing. Constantly flowing. But you have to be a valley, a womb, to receive him. If you are above him, how can you receive? That flowing energy cannot come to you. It will miss you. So bow down. Even in a minor surrender with a guru, energy begins to flow. Suddenly, immediately, you become vehicle of a great force. There are thousands and thousands of stories. Just by touch, just by a look, someone became enlightened. They don't appear rational to us. How is this possible? This is possible. Even a look into our eyes will change your total being. But it can change only if your eyes just are vacant, valley-like. If you can absorb the look of the teacher immediately, you will be different. But these are minor surrenders. When one surrenders totally, and these minor surrenders prepare you for the total surrender. Once you have known that through surrender you receive something unknown, unbelievable, unexpected, never even dreamed, then you are ready for a major surrender. And that is the work of the guru, to help you in minor surrenders so that you can gather courage for a major surrender, for a total surrender. One last question. What are the exact indications to know that a particular technique one is practicing will lead to the ultimate? There are indications. One, you begin to feel a different identity within you. You are no more the same. If the technique fits you, immediately you are a different person. If you are a husband or a wife, you are never the same husband. If you are a shopkeeper, you are never the shopkeeper again the same. Whatsoever you are, if the technique fits you, you are a different person. That is the first indication. So if you begin to feel strange about yourself, know that something is happening to you. If you remain the same and don't feel any strangeness, nothing is happening. This is the first indication whether a technique fits you. If it fits, immediately you are transported, transformed into a different person. Suddenly this happens. You look at the world in a different way. Eyes are the same, but the looker behind is different. Secondly, all that creates tensions, conflicts, starts dropping. It is not that when you have practiced the method for years, then your conflicts, anxieties, tensions will drop. No, if the method fits you, immediately they start dropping. You can feel a lightness coming to you. You are being unburdened. You will begin to feel, if the technique fits you, that the gravitation has become reverse. Now the earth is not pulling you down, rather the sky is pulling you up. How do you feel when the aeroplane takes off? Everything is disturbed. Suddenly there is a jerk and the gravitation becomes meaningless. Now the earth is not pulling you. You are going away from gravitation. The same jerk happens if a meditative technique fits you. Suddenly you take off. Suddenly you feel the earth has become meaningless. There is no gravitation. It is not pulling you down. You are being pulled up. In religious terminology, this is called grace. There are two forces, gravity and grace. Grace means pulling you upwards. Gravity means pulling you downwards. That's why in meditation many people certainly feel they have no weight. That's why many people feel an inner levitation. So many have reported to me when the technique fits them, they report me, this is strange. We close our eyes and we feel that we are a little bit above the earth, 1 feet, 2 feet, even 4 feet above that. And when we open our eyes, we are just on the ground. When we close our eyes, we are levitated. So what is this? And when we open our eyes, we are just on the ground. We were never levitated. The body remains on the ground, but you levitate. This levitation is really a pull from the above. If the technique fits, you have been pulled, because the working of the technique is to make available for you the upward pull. This is what that technique means, to make you available for the force which can pull you up. So if it fits, you know, you have become weightless. Thirdly, whatsoever now you will do, whatsoever, howsoever trivial, will be different. You will walk in a different way. You will sit in a different way. You will eat in a different way. Everything will be different. This difference you will feel everywhere. Sometimes this strange experience of being different creates fear. One wants to be back again the same, because you were so attuned with the old. It was a routine world. Even boring, but you were efficient in it. Now, everywhere you will feel a gap. You will feel your efficiency is lost. You will feel that your utility is reduced. You will feel that everywhere you are an outsider. one has to pass through this period. You will become attuned again. You have changed, not the world. So you will not fit. So remember, the third thing, when the technique fits you, you will not fit the world. You will become unfit. Everywhere something is loose, some bolt is missing. Everywhere you will feel that there has been an earthquake. And everything has remained the same, only you. You have become different. But you will be attuned again on a different plane, on a higher plane. The disturbance is felt just like when a child grows, becomes sexually mature. At the age of 14 or 15, every boy feels that he has become strange. A new force has entered sex. It was not there, or it was, then it was hidden. Now for the first time he has become available for a new current of force. That's why boys are very awkward. Girls, boys, when they sexually mature, they are very awkward. They are nowhere. They are no more children and they are yet not men. So they are in between, fitting nowhere. If they play with small children, they feel awkward. They have become men. If they start making friendship with men, they feel awkward. They are still children. They fit no one. The same phenomena happens. When a technique fits you, a new energy source becomes available, greater than sex. You are again in a transitory period. Now you cannot fit in this world of worldly man. You are not a child, and you cannot yet fit the world of saints. You are yet not a man. So in between, one feels awkward. If a technique fits you, these three things will come up. But you may not have expected that I should say these things. You may have expected, I will say, you will become more silent, more quiet. And I am saying quite contrary, you will become more disturbed. When the technique fits, you will become more disturbed, not more silent. Silence will come later on. And if silence comes and not disturbance, know well, this is not a technique. This is just getting adjusted to the old pattern. That's why more people go to prayers than for meditations, because prayer gives you a consolation. It fits you, adjusts you into your world. Prayer virtually was doing the same thing now psychoanalysts are doing. If you are disturbed, they will make you less disturbed, adjusted to the pattern, to the society, to the family. So going to a psychoanalyst for 1, 2, or 3 years, you will not get better, but you will be more adjusted. Prayer was doing the same thing and priests were doing the same thing. They make you more adjusted. Your child has died and you are disturbed, and you go to a priest and he says, don't be disturbed. Because children die only. Only those children die early whom God loves most. So he calls them early. Your child has been called early. God loves him more. Or singles, that don't be worried. The soul never dies. Your child is in heaven. One woman was here just a few days before. Her husband has died just the last month. She is disturbed. She came to me and she said, only assure me that he is born in a good place and then everything will be okay. Just give me certainty that he has not gone to hell or he has not become an animal. He is in heaven or he has become a god or something. Just if you can assure me of this, then everything will is okay. Then I can bear. Otherwise, I am miserable. So the priest will do. He will say, okay, your husband is born a god in the seventh heaven, and he is very happy, and he is waiting for you. Priest's prayers, they make you adjusted to the pattern. You feel better. Meditation is a science. It is not going to help you in adjustment. It is going to help you in transformation. That's why I said these signs will be there as indications. Silence will come, but not as adjustment. Silence will come as an inner flowering. Silence then will not be an adjustment with the society, with the family, with the work, business. No. Then silence will be real harmony with the universe, not with society, family, etc. Then a deep harmony flowers between you and the totality. Then there is silence. But that will come later. First you will get disturbed. First you will get mad. Because you are mad, only unaware. If the technique fits, it will make you aware of everything that you are. Your anarchy, your mind, your madness, everything will come to light. You are just a dark mass. When the technique fits, as if suddenly there is light, and the whole mass becomes apparent. For the first time you encounter yourself as you are. You would like to put the light off and go to sleep again. It is fearful. This is the point where the guru becomes helpful. He says, don't be afraid. This is just the beginning. And don't escape from it. Because this light first shows you what you are. And if you